Welcome to Muse and Hearth, a podcast for women cultivating their minds as well as their homes. I'm Lydia Fukushan, and I'm here with my co-host and sister-in-law, Valerie Abraham. And today we are going to be talking about picture books. Everyone knows a child who would appreciate a good picture book, and with Advent and Christmas season almost upon us, we thought we'd share some favorites. We tried to find books which combine great stories and great illustrations. So I put together a couple categories here, and I think we can try to fit them into those categories if it's helpful, Valerie. Yes. And you and I can just bounce back and forth. I think one that you
and mine are kind of, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, mine are kind of all over the place. So we will see how they fit in the categories.
Sounds good. I think it actually might be easiest to start with a couple categories. I actually thought of four. I'm sure there are more. Mm-hmm. But I thought of four author illustrators who kind of need a category all to themselves because they write such wonderful stories. And the illustrations are so beautifully paired with them.
So I saw some of the names you were writing down. I love that we found some of the same titles, I think. Or same authors, anyway. We'll see if it's the same title.
Yeah.
Kind of like a boggle game, right? If we cross off the ones that we write down that are the same.
Cancel that one out. We all both thought of that one. I think it just means that they're 200% wonderful.
there we go.
So I'll throw out McCloskey first because I know you recently bought a new McCloskey book and I have that same one on my stack. So I might let you go for that one first.
So, well, I just got it. I actually have not even read it yet to the boys. I just knew that it was one of the McCloskeys that I had not tracked down yet. So I was really excited to find it. So here's the funny thing, though. So we're on a 3-hour time difference. It's later for me, and my brain is not fully functional at this time of day. I cannot remember the title of it. Do you remember the title?
Was it Time of Wonder?
Something about Wonder.
Yeah,
Time of Wonder.
Wonder.
Thank you.
Yes. And it's actually been a long time since I've read it also, but grew up on it as a child. And I think it does capture the wonder of the world and of normal things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know,
the wonder of the ordinary.
And also he does a lot of New England. It's a New England theme often because I think that's where he, I should say, I don't know, but I'm assuming that's where he lived and grew up. So everyone knows Make Way for Ducklings.
Yes.
Which is a great
one. And Blueberries for Sal.
Yep. And all of those are. Make Way for Ducklings is in Boston, and is Blueberries for Sal set on Nantucket?
Maybe. I don't think that one's as tied to a specific location. But the other one that I was, so there's the Time for Wonder that you were talking about, which is also interesting because I noticed it has a very different style of illustration than a lot of his other ones. The other one that I was going to mention by McCloskey, though, is One Morning in Maine. So with the New England theme. And that one, kind of like you were talking about with The Ordinary Wonder, it's just, I love how it takes a kind of an everyday story. It's just the things that are a big deal when you're, you know, 6 years old or so, that are really special, and it delights in those things for what they are. So it's a story of, actually, it's a story about Sal. I think it's supposed to be Sal from Blueberries for Sal, just a few years older. Mm-hmm. And it's a story of her and her little sister. There's a little sister this time too, and her parents, and just kind of a day in their life as they gather clams, and Sal loses her first tooth. And then they go on a trip to the village across the harbor in their boat. And it's just these little events in the day of Sal that are retold in a really delightful way from Sal's perspective.
Yes. Yeah. So another one that I grew up on is the story Lentil. And it's a little bit more humorous. I believe there are black and white drawings in this one. And a little boy named Lentil who cannot whistle to save his life, no matter how hard he tries. learns to play the harmonica, and by the end of the story manages to save the day for the whole town with his harmonica. And it's just a great little humorous tale. And there's a villainous character named Old Sneep who sits on a roof and sucks on a lemon. It's just a really great, fun little story. So all the way around, McCloskey is a great one. The illustrations are lovely. The stories are great. And then if you want to jump up a reading level, you can do Homer Price, which is not a picture book, but just requires a mention here because it is a really good story. If you have a reticent reader, I think all of my kids right around second, third grade, sort of struggling to get the read to themselves gears going. And that book was the breakthrough. So
really?
Yeah.
I forgot that was also McCloskey. That is a really fun one.
That is such a good book. So anyway, he kind of gets a category all by himself. Have I forgotten any that we should chat about? Or
I think we covered the classics.
I think we did.
Specifically the ones that aren't. So everyone knows Blueberries for Sal and Little Ducklings.
Or if they don't, they should. So
right.
You must
but
know.
But getting to mention some of those others.
Yeah. Right. And I have to say, my mom was great about it, going ahead and investing in hardcover copies. And she would even buy the library supply company plastic covers for the dust covers. And so she would fold them on. And I have those books now. And they're so beautifully preserved, even though they've been read and read and read. So, you know, you can't always, but if you can, a lot of these books come in beautiful hardcover copies, which are just a pleasure to hold, and they do last. Unlike, I'm thinking of our board books, which I feel like I have to reinvest in a copy of our favorites.
Right.
Every baby, because they chew on them. And
yes.
As much as they're supposed to be indestructible.
Or George will start finding, my youngest will start finding how to separate the layers of each board page.
Yes. This happens at our house too. So for older children.
Or the other day I found Francis trying to wash a book in the sink.
Ooh, yeah, that's a bad one. We definitely had some water spilled all over a book this morning, and I was thinking, no, where's the plastic cover? It's see-through, so you can see the dust cover. It's just a really, I can't think of the material. It's not cellophane. It's a thicker grade stuff. But
almost like a vinyl.
Yeah,
texture.
I guess you could say. And you can fold it to size. So you need the right height, but the width of the book doesn't matter because you can cut it and fold it to size. So that's kind of nice.
I need to look into that.
Actually, I think you can fold the height too, but you want to get something close enough in range so you don't have to do a lot of origami to get it covered. Anyway, did you happen to snag any books by Jan Brett?
I did, actually. I was really excited when I saw you had her on
there.
So the book that I have from Jan Brett, I was not familiar with her until recently, but my mother-in-law gave us this book. It's called The Mitten.
That one was on my stack, too.
Yes. It's a really, another one of those stories where it's, you know, it's just telling the world through a child's eyes. And this one with a little more imagination, there's kind of this story that he's seeing happen with his mitten as he goes out to play in the snow. And it's fun because I think you can put yourself in the grandmother who made the mitten's eyes as well, as she's seeing her handmade mittens being put through some very hard wear and tear on the first day.
Yes.
But just a fun story involving woodland creatures.
I'll and just that. charming Scandinavian-esque illustrations, which are just wonderful. Oh, go ahead.
Assuming your book has the same, I have the small kind of pocket edition of it, but there's panels on the sides, almost like an illuminated manuscript or something. And I think those are really fun as kids to read because you get the main picture and then you start kind of poking through, investigating all these little side panels with detailing.
They tell another little story.
Life.
And actually, this is making me wonder because I grew up with one of them that we read a lot was well, I don't know if it was a lot, but enough that I remember it was Trouble with Trolls, which is a little bit more of a fairy tale type story. And it may have been that one, but I can't remember for sure. There's one that in the bottom, so there's sidebars, but also underneath, there's little mice, and you sort of see their life under the ground, under the snow. And it could be that one, or maybe it is, she wrote another one called The Hat. And it could be that The Hat is the one with the little mice that live on the bottom of the page. I like your comparison to an illuminated manuscript. She just adds something to the story. So for little ones who are listening, and it gives them a little extra something to look for, you're right.
Right, especially on rereads.
So yeah, she's another author that you can definitely just jump in and try any of her books. McCloskey, Jan Brett. I was also thinking, well, now I'm blanking on, oh, Beatrix Potter, you know, another classic. She did her own illustrations. And some of those stories like Jemima Puddle Duck and Peter Rabbit. So
I'm actually curious to hear which one you would recommend starting with then, because I'm a little bit familiar. Like, it's impossible to not be at least somewhat familiar with Beatrix Potter, but I don't know her well. I didn't grow up reading her much at all. So where would you start? Because I think we have a few tucked away somewhere on our shelves that I haven't dug out yet for the boys.
I would probably start with Peter Rabbit because he's just such a classic. And then the stories of Flopsy Mopsy and Cottontail and Benjamin Bunny. So those are all really great ones to start with. But Jemima Puddle Duck is actually really fun and tells the story of a bunch of ducks who end up getting dressed in someone's clothes and I think being a little vain about it. And then they end up in a pond trying to eat, and they lose all their prized clothes that they're rather vain about. So it's really,
that rings a bell. Maybe I'd
It's an entertaining, that's an entertaining one.
Yeah, that one I was not as familiar with, but now that you mention it, it does sound, I wonder if I read it way back when.
And also so Mrs. Tittlemouse, the story of Mrs. Tittlemouse. That's a good one. She was a how does it go? She was a most particular, very tidy little mouse. And she runs across a frog who, or toad, maybe a toad, who gets his muddy little feet all over her tidy space. So I think my mom really liked that one. And I think she associated with Mrs. Tittlemouse and sympathized with Mrs. Tittlemouse. So that's a fun one.
Anyway. That does sound fun.
And then,
all right, so more Beatrix Potter.
Yes. And I also, for a fourth author that I threw out there, and then I realized he didn't illustrate. I just now realized he didn't illustrate his own. But I think he may have had an illustrator that was sort of known for illustrating James Herriot books. So James Herriot being another great set of stories. But I don't know. Did you have any James Herriot on your stack?
I didn't grab any. That's another one I'm not as familiar with, but have been introduced to through Matthew's side of the family. They love James Herriot. And we really enjoyed reading some of his stories to the kids. But I haven't delved in very deeply to him yet.
Some of them are, they're good stories for the kids as they get up into elementary age, and your littles are still pretty little. The one I'm holding here is illustrated by Ruth Brown. But I thought I brought another one. So I might let you pick a favorite to go for next while I look around for my other James Herriot for a second.
So coming back to James Herriot, I would add a fifth in the author illustrator category, at least I think. Let me double check. I think she does her own illustrations. This is another one that you've heard me talk about recently when we were chatting about books earlier, but Virginia Lee Burton. Another classic mid-century author. A lot of these seem to be early to mid-20th century authors. It was a golden age of sorts. But she wrote, so again, the deficiencies of my own education. This is another author that I was not familiar with until having kids and people started giving me books. And my mother-in-law introduced me to this one as well. And so she wrote a number of books that are considered classics and Caldecott Award winners, Caldecott Award being, you know, one of the gold standard awards for children's books.
For picture books in particular, and, right? Mm, I think.
Is it picture books specifically?
Yeah, I think it. Okay. The illustrations are an important factor in that.
Okay. So the ones that we have by her that I particularly love are, well, one that I didn't grab, it's downstairs, but Frances loves it. It's called Mike Mulligan and His Steam Shovel.
Oh, yes. That's a good one.
Yes. And the, and that's just a fun story. A lot of them have to do with kind of the changes happening in the world in the first part of the turn of the century, early 20th century, the changes in society and cities that are happening. So Mike Mulligan has a steam shovel named Marianne, and they are building all kinds of beautiful things in New York City, but then things, they start to, people start to want, what is it? Is it diesel trucks? Or diesel steam engine, not steam, diesel engines though. And so they're out of work. And then, you know, the story is about them finding their one great job that ends up being their home too in the end. I'll just leave it at that. And then the other one that I particularly love by her is called The Little House. This is one of those children's books that I have trouble reading to the kids without tearing up every time. It's just, it's the story of a little house. Yes, the story of a little house and the changes that this little house sees through the generations, basically. So it starts as a little house in the country and it sees the city lights far away. It's curious what the city is. And then the city starts coming closer. The city starts being built around it as the city becomes bigger and encompassing the little house. And it starts to become a very big city. And so the little house is, you know, kind of neglected and forgotten in this big bustling city now. And then there's a really sweet twist at the end. The little house gets a quiet, peaceful life back and gets new owners who love her again and bring her kind of back to life. And so it has a very nostalgic feel to it, sort of a little bit melancholy, but not in a bad way, a very... You're very happy where the story ends.
It's a sweet one, yeah,
yeah, it. Yeah,
yeah. That we should definitely make that. That's another category there. I'll make sure to write that one down in the show notes. Virginia Lee Burton, and I did look up my other James Herriot book, Only One Wolf, and there's also Moses the Kitten, which I think is a Christmassy story. Unless there's another one called The Christmas Kitten. But the two...
Oh, we have that one.
Oh, yeah, you have that one. Okay, so that one's good for this time of year. Get that one. if you don't own it already. So the two illustrators that I'm seeing, and I own a copy from each illustrator, is Peter Barrett. He's one that does beautiful James Herriot illustrations. And you can get single James Herriot stories in a picture book style, not just the, so there's the Treasury for Children where they're bound together, but you can get them in a beautiful hardcover version for each individual story as well. And Peter Barrett illustrates those, but also Ruth Brown has illustrated some of them. So,
And in both cases, if I'm not mistaken, they're just very rich full page illustrations, right?
Yes. Yeah. Definitely a lot for kids to look over as they listen. And just really beautiful.
Which, yeah.
Kind of makes you want to go there.
Not to bring up too much of a tangent, but I think that's one of the things that we love about these books that we're talking about is that so many of the more recent children's books just have very insipid or, in fact, I was reading an article that was talking about this, the computer-driven illustrations and not the just the rich hand-drawn illustrations that older books used to have. And I think that's part of what adds a richness to these classic books.
Yeah, I think that that combo deal of a really great story and then the beautiful illustration is just...
Right.
It's a little harder to find in newer books, but there's all those classics out there. So, and not all of them. So these, I would say that these illustrations, a lot of them are really classic art style, really skilled artists. But in one of our categories, I have some that are really playful and they're sort of digital art images. There are a lot of bright colors and stuff. So not just pencil drawings or watercolors or whatever. These are really bright, but they're cute. And I stumbled across this series by accident. And this falls in another category that I thought we should try to fill, which is fairy tales. And I put poetry in there. So fairy tales and nursery rhymes and poetry. Yes. I kind of put those all
in. I have a couple for a couple for poetry.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll have to talk about those because those are great. You're then you're introducing amazing poetry to your children with these beautiful illustrations. And I love that. So this book that I stumbled across by accident was something just at a kind of like a Marshalls or a TJ Maxx. Or we have Ross here. And I pulled it off the shelf and said, oh, I'll take that home. And it's a retelling of a classic fairy tale. I'm holding Hansel and Gretel, but they have a bunch. They have The Three Little Pigs. My kids love that one. They have Rumpelstiltskin, Rapunzel, I think The Princess and the Pea, Little Red Riding Hood. So they have a whole slew of these classic children's stories. And the covers are a little bit squishy, like they have some kind of foam underneath the cover, which just makes them fun to hold.
So fun for kids to hold.
Yeah, and they're bright illustrations. And there may be a few that are a little funky, but in general, I find them very cute. And it's a whole set that you can get. And I'm not entirely sure they're in print anymore. So you may need to look on Alibris or ABE Books or even Amazon in the used book section. I think I've gotten them on Amazon. But the way to find them, as I discovered myself when I was trying to fill out our set, is look up
I need to write this down.
Paragon Publishers. Paragon, P-A-R-R-O, I'm sorry, P-A-R-R-A-G-O-N, Paragon Books is what they're officially called, Paragon Books. And then if you look up maybe Hansel and Gretel or The Three Little Pigs or any of those classic stories, you'll find these Paragon Books editions. And I wish they sold them in a set, but you kind of have to piecemeal your set together. And I really enjoy, on the whole, I can't say every single one is great, but I like the retellings of the fairy tale or fairy tales or stories. I don't find that they make them too sweetie nice. They're kind of the classic way to, the old standby way to tell it, you know, rather than modernizing it into something that's a little more touchy-feely or whatever.
The wolf was just misunderstood and the three little pigs kind of story.
Exactly, exactly. I find it's just a good, solid retelling of these fairy tales with some fun, bright illustrations. So that would be one to check out. You said you have some poetry titles.
Yes. So one book, I can't remember who recommended this. I think I had done actually a, sorry if the audio goes a little wonky while I pull this book out from the stack over here. There we go. I think someone recommended this when I was doing a Facebook query, just asking for poetry books for kids, which could start a whole nother, another whole rant rather about some of the terrible things that are out there. And I'm not even talking about, you know, morally objectionable content or anything, but just the very insipid things that we feed our children. We were, so I have both boys signed up for a free book program with the Dolly Parton Imagination Library because we used to live in Tennessee and I think the hospital or something told us about it when they were born. And it's a really neat program where they send, as part of a literacy effort, they send a free book to your child every month for 5 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
Quite remarkable. Yeah. And there's a number of classics that they send. But, you know, there's been a few that weren't ones we loved as much. And I was surprised. I don't know if I should say who it was, but it was a classic illustrator working with this author, and the poems were like not even really poetry by any stretch of the imagination, even if you tried to interpret it as the most modern free verse possible or something. It was just very, Very stilted, unimaginative, not beautiful words on the page. And so, anyways, that was the context that led me to start asking people for recommendations of poetry for children. And one of the ones, I don't love every poem in here. There's a number of more modern ones that are, or just, how do I put it? Just a more modern spirit in the attitude towards nature that comes out sometimes, but there's also a lot of classics. It's called Sing a Song of Seasons, a Nature Poem for Every Day of the Year. And it's this beautiful big hardback, and there's literally a poem for every single day of the year, generally thematically on point with, all these summer poems, and, autumn poems about looking here, Sometimes that it's creative pairings of things that you wouldn't think that would go with a particular month, and then you read it and think, oh wow, that really does capture the spirit of that month, as the seasons play out,
So
and beautiful illustrations as well.
am I understanding that there are 365 poems in it?
365, yes.
I love
And
that.
there's a ribbon, ribbon that keeps your place so you can just turn to your poem for the day. And it's, I mean, it's everything from Shakespeare to looking at October here, the table of contents for October, Shakespeare, Robert Frost, Carl Sandburg, and then, a handful of more modern ones as well. But really fun book to go through with the kids, and they love even just picking it up on their own and looking at it because of the pictures. So that's been a fun one to go through with them.
That sounds
And
fantastic.
then, yes, so it's Sing a Song of Seasons, it's called, illustrated by Fran Preston Gannon. And selected by Fiona Waters.
Can you say the
The
name one more
other,
time? I missed it.
let's see. The illustrator is Fran Preston Gannon. It's a
Fran
hyphenated last
Preston Gannon.
name.
Okay.
And then, and we can give all the spellings and links in the show notes. And then the editor or selector is Fiona Waters.
That sounds really great. I'm thinking I may need to add that to the Christmas list for my kids this year. So
Highly recommend it.
I have a couple in the poetry category, but they're illustrating specific single poems. Two of them are illustrated by Susan Jeffers, so she may have more as well. One is a Robert Frost poem called "Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening." And is a really beautiful black and white pencil with just a little bit of color on every page in one specific spot, or a few specific spots that sort of catch your eye. But everything is this beautiful graphite and white. So that's a great one. It's a Robert Frost poem. And then she also has done Hiawatha by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. So that's another classic, and again, a beautiful, beautiful pencil drawings. And then while we're on the topic of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Paul Revere's Ride, illustrated by Ted Rand, is a really fantastic picture book with another, famous poem. So those were on my stack. They're not in a collection. They're all separate books, but those are really great. And then I have Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod, a poem by Eugene Field, illustrated by Johanna Westerman. And those are really neat, imaginative illustrations, and they're blue themed. Like, they're mostly blue. And it gives a very, it's a rich medium blue that gives the impression of nighttime, of sleeping. And it ends, the poem ends saying, "Winkin' and Blinkin' are two little eyes, and Nod is a little head. And the wooden shoe that sailed the skies is a wee one's trundle bed. So shut your eyes while mother sings of wonderful sights that be, and you shall see the beautiful things as you rock in the misty sea. Where the old shoe rocked the fishermen three, Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod." And you see the moon, and a cat staring at the moon, and three children sleeping in their bed, imagining things in their sleep. And it's a really beautiful, slightly unusual illustrated version of that.
That sounds really interesting. And I love the, even just the bit of poetry that you read at the end. It almost puts you to sleep just listening to it.
It is. It's very soothing, isn't it?
Rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Do you have others in the poetry and fairy tale category that are on the tip of your tongue? Or
This would probably count as a fairy tale, although I forgot to grab it on the way up. But relatively classic, at least, I think, in our circles. Margaret Hodges, right? Is that her name? Let me type it in right now since I forgot to bring it up. Make sure I'm not giving the wrong name.
Did you find her?
The St. George and the Dragon. Yes, it is Margaret Hodges. I had the author, right?
Oh, yes.
Yes. And the illustrator is Trina Shart, I think, or Trina Shart Hyman. And it is just a beautiful, so kind of like when we were talking about the Jan Brett book with the illuminated manuscript styling. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like that, but much more of a, I guess you could say, high art style rather than folk art. It looks much more medieval in the illustrations, in the marginalia that she draws as well. And it's just a retelling of the story of St. George and the Dragon as it is told by Spenser. So it's basically a retelling of Edmund Spenser's Fairy Queen, or book one of the Fairy Queen. And beautiful. It's on the long side for little kids, but it's a good one to work towards as their attention spans grow longer, because it's just, it's such a good story, and she retells it very well. Because there's ways to, you know, take a classic story and retell it where you feel like it's so abridged that they're not catching any of the beauty of the original story and the language. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think she does a really good job of making it more approachable for children, but still language that they can aspire to in a way that they want, that you want them to learn how to use someday. So highly recommend that
one. A book to grow into. Yeah.
Yes. St. George and the Dragon.
Jumping back to something that's accessible to the really little ones, The Real Mother Goose, illustrated by Blanche Fisher Wright. And she's just got a very, it's a fanciful but classic illustration style. And it's just a collection of Mother Goose stories.
Is it the original, like, unedited Mother Goose?
I actually am unsure whether it's unabridged or if I'm looking to see if it can.
If it's called the original, it probably is.
The Real Mother Goose.
Because I've noticed we have a couple. Yeah. We have a couple that have Mother Goose in them, including, I think, the Richard Scarry illustrated version, that you can tell that they've changed a few things to make it more palatable to a modern audience.
Yeah. This one says it is teachers and librarians everywhere acclaim it as the standard Mother Goose. Huh. All the familiar verses are here, exactly as they have been repeated from generation to generation. So that's published by Scholastic.
I'll have to look into that.
The Real Mother Goose.
Did you say Scholastic?
By Scholastic, yeah. And okay. And again, we'll try to include, because a lot of these books have been done multiple times, we'll try to include our favorite illustrators in the show notes just so that you can go find the edition we're chatting about. Mm-hmm. Another author illustrator, but I don't know all of her books, so I don't know across the board. I think they're recommendable, but they should be, is Elsa Beskow. Or Beskow, I'm not sure. It's Beskow. Mm-hmm. And she writes and illustrates cute little illustrations of children as stories. And they're kind of, they're fairy tale-ish. So the one I have in front of me here is called The Curious Fish. And a little fish gets curious about the outside world, even though he's warned not to by his elders, his aunts and his uncles and everyone. Mm. And so he ends up sprouting legs. He gets a spell put on him where he can sprout legs and go on land. And a little boy finds him and takes him home. And he sort of realizes with regret, and everyone back in the pond panics because where did he go? And he didn't listen. And now he's captured forever. Anyways, cute little story. And the little boy in the end ends up following the fish who escapes back to the pond and learning how to swim. So it's just a cute story. And Elsa Beskow writes a bunch of those. You can buy them You can find them in small little handheld editions or larger, kind of like an 8x8 or 9x9 square. She's another fun one to look at. So let's see.
I'm getting lots of ideas.
What's that?
I'm getting lots of ideas for
I know. Christmas here. Shopping is coming.
yes. one last one for the poetry section. I guess a song would count as poetry. This was another one that was given to me by my sister-in-law. Can you tell that my in-laws love books as well? so this was given to me by Heidi. Thank you, Heidi. And it's an illustrated version of The 12 Days of Christmas. So perfect as we're heading into the Advent and Christmas season. And it's, again, just those beautiful, lush illustrations. A little bit in, I would call this sort of a medieval Victorian style, maybe.
A lot of...
So the central illustrations are Victorian, and then the borders are very medieval.
Does it have a lot of gold and jewel tones? I think we might be holding the same one. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Laurel Long?
Yes, that's the one I have on my stack, too.
So that's kind of a... poetry / Christmas category transition.
Yes, that's a great one. And if we jump into, I sort of thought we could have a category for Christian literature, Bible stories, illustrated Bible stories, and that sort of thing.
Yes, I have a couple for this.
Oh, good, great. Well, one that I have is Exodus by Brian Wildsmith, and it tells the story of the Exodus all the way through to when the Israelites enter the promised land. And in reading, I think pretty faithful to the story, and the illustrations are stunning, a really unique painted style, paint and maybe pen. Exodus by Brian Wildsmith is one.
And I love that it's the story of Exodus too, because so often kids' books from the Bible are just telling the five or so classic stories over and over, you know, David and Goliath, Daniel and the lion's den, but to cover one of the more important historical narratives is really, and over a broader period like that is really neat.
Mm-hmm. Now you said you have some for this category. I'll let you run with it.
All right. so the first one that I have here is, this is one my parents gave us. It's called The Church History ABCs. So it's an ABC book. Is there a word for an ABC book in English? In French, we call it an abécédaire.
We really ought to have a word, but we don't.
But anyways, it's a book of the alphabet with a different figure from church history for each letter. So C is, unsurprisingly, John Calvin. But then, you know, you also have Monica, Augustine's mother, for M, I for Ignatius, H for Hippolyta. So it's not just the super well-known ones. It brings in a lot. John Donne even is in here. Jonathan Edwards. So a lot of really fun characters, both classic and a little bit less well-known as well. And fun illustrations. And then it gives just a brief biography for each of those characters as well. So that's a good one. And then, and also, a little bit late for Reformation Day, but close to Reformation Day and All Saints Day. Then the other one, this is one that our whole family grew up with. And I had almost forgotten about it until someone gave it to me at our baby shower. And I was really delighted to discover not only that someone else in the world loved it, but that they thought of us and gave it to us so that we could carry on the tradition. It's called Favorite Parables from the Bible, Stories Jesus Told. The illustrators... illustrators and authors are Nick Butterworth and Mick Inkpin. It's the parable of the lost sheep, the two sons, 10 silver coins, the good stranger, precious pearl, the house on the rock, the little gate, and the rich farmer. I think you can buy them individually as well as little bitty hardbacks, but this one comes in a collection of all of them. And it's hard to describe. So the tellings are good. I think, you know, reasonably solid, faithful retellings. And there's something about the illustrations, though, that is particularly captivating, where I still love looking at them now when I read them to my kids. And I remember being a child and having this book read out loud to me. And there's something that's captivating and funny at the same time about the way that they're illustrated, the little details that the illustrators put in. I don't know if you all are familiar with them, although I know Daniel probably read them when he was growing up.
I've never seen that book before, so that one was also going on my list. I'm just thinking that there are some of these that it would be wonderful to read one from every morning before starting school, or just on a rotation. So the Mother Goose book, for example, or the poetry book, or this one with the Bible stories, the parables specifically.
Something that has a lot of parts kind of to
And just give make sure the children are conversant. I've thought about this before. I think when you have it, have some of these stories so ingrained in your mind from your own childhood, it's easy to assume that your children somehow know them. And this is what I'm running into, as my oldest is 11 and I'm starting to think, you know, does he, the not long ago, I was telling a vivid retelling of the story of Samson and the ox goad Philistine. So, you know, really boy fun story, you know. But I thought, it's so ingrained in me to know these stories. And yet he, for whatever reason, not heard that one or didn't remember that one from having heard it. And some of these little collections, you can also, you know, read along and be sure you're reading through the Bible or reading through poetry or whatever. But some of these collections help make sure you introduce them on a semi-regular basis to things that made up the framework of what everyone knew in the English language for for, you know, decades or hundreds of years, like the Mother Goose nursery rhymes. Does everyone know Jack Sprat could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean, and so betwixt the two of them, they licked the platter clean? I mean, it's not something that you necessarily need on a daily basis, but it's something that all school children memorized or wrote up on the the chalkboard or whatever.
A shared repertoire.
Peter Pumpkin Eater. I'm like, can I think of some really good ones here? Or are they all really weird?
You don't realize until you read through them as an adult how strange some of the classic rhymes are.
It is very true about fairy tales as well. I have to say, I loved Hans Christian Andersen and Grimm's fairy tales as a child. And boy, you go back and read those and whew, they didn't bother me, but they can be gruesome.
Reminds me.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just realizing that we haven't really done fairy tales proper yet with our kids. We need to start doing that.
So those, not illustrated necessarily, but Andrew Lang's fairy tale books, they're different colors. So there's the blue fairy book, the green fairy book, the red fairy book. And those are, that's a great series for introducing fairy tales to middle elementary kids. I think they tend to be the standby version of those stories, again, where he's faithful to the retelling that everyone's heard. So actually, if you have an Audible membership, right now, the I think it's the blue fairy book is included in your membership. You don't have to buy it.
Oh, really?
So I have that loaded in our library now so my kids can listen to fairy tales at night if they want to. So,
oh, that's fun.
That is kind of fun. Well, I have to throw in one more Christmassy title since we're coming in towards Christmas. And then I have one other one in this category, too, of Christian literature. So Song of the Stars, paintings by Allison J. by Sally Lloyd-Jones. And this is one of those that I cry every time I read it. And it just it captures the mercy and kindness of Jesus coming as a baby to be the savior of the world. And it's a great one. It's there's not a whole lot to say except that it is the Christmas story and talks about how the whole world is waiting in anticipation. So it's actually a really great Advent story as well. And it talks about how the world knows. So it says, and I'm jumping in the middle, wild stallions drummed it to the ground. Get ready, be glad, be glad. On a lonely peak, a lion raised his strong head and roared it out to the empty wilderness, the mighty king, the prince of peace. All the stars joined together in a chorus that rang out through the heavens, the bright and morning star. And on a hillside overlooking a little town, sheep nuzzled their new lambs, the good shepherd. And then it goes on to the angels lighting up the sky. And a tiny cry rang out in the cold night air. Anyway, it's, you know, it's kind of the classic retelling, assuming wintry cold and certain things that that are kind of assumed in the Christmas story that may not be historically accurate, but not overly so. It's not overdone.
Right.
And just a very...
Oh, that is really beautiful sounding.
A very sweet retelling and also glorious anticipation of Christ's birth. And the cadence of the words is really well done in this one. It really helps you kind of move along with a breathless anticipation of when Jesus is born. So I think that's a, I think that's a good one to recommend too. And then my other one in this category is Dangerous Journey, the story of Pilgrim's Progress. And this one's a big one. This is like multiple nights reading and probably easier and more accessible for older children. But it is the story.
I think we grew up with this one.
Yes. I think this is a classic. Yes. We grew up with it too. And it's the story of Pilgrim's Progress. And I'm quite certain it isn't word for word. It's abridged, but it really does capture the essence of John Bunyan in a child-sized form, so to speak. So that was another one I was going to throw in there. Do you have others?
I do. I have matching your categories, one Christmas one and one more general one.
Great.
So the Christmas one I have is, so similar to what you were saying, you know, telling the story over again, but from the perspective of the animals in the stable. So it's assuming, kind of like you were saying with the tradition, you know, it's assuming that it was a stable. There's obviously debate over a stable or a cave or et cetera, but it's called Room for a Little One, A Christmas Tale. Mm. And just a really sweet retelling about the animals in the stable and a cold night, again, like the one you were describing as well. And the animals gathering inside and being, it's, you know, very anthropomorphic. There's the dialogue between the animals as they're huddling in from the cold and extending kindness to each other by welcoming the other animals in. And then at the end, there's a donkey who comes along and they welcome the donkey in along with the people who are on the donkey. So it's obviously, you know, Mary and Joseph, as Mary is in labor, coming into the stable. So a very sweet, short story there, and nice illustrations as well. And then the other one, this is one that Matthew and I absolutely love. It's called I Believe, the Nicene Creed, illustrated by Pauline Baynes. Mm. So the name might ring a bell. Pauline Baynes was the original illustrator for the Chronicles of Narnia.
Ooh.
And so she was the one who worked directly with Lewis on the illustrations, and she loved medieval style art. Can you tell that there's a little bit of a theme where a lot of the illustrations I like are medieval in their style? So basically, this is like reading an illuminated manuscript, very intentionally so.
Just a feast and for the eyes. It's really beautiful.
Yes, yes. And the text of the book is simply the Nicene Creed. So it just goes through the whole thing and illustrates.
It's a great way for kids to memorize it. Of it. If you just read it
is.
A few times through.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So really neat. Not retelling. It is the text, but really neat illustration of the Nicene Creed, which
rendition,
is not something you rendition. Yeah, not something you think of as an illustrated work usually, but and by a classic illustrator as well.
Well, we have not tackled just straight up classic stories, and I have at least one in that category right off the top of my head, and there are others. And we've also not tackled what I would call educational picture books, where they teach about a time in history or a person. So I have one about Albert Einstein, one about the Transcontinental Railroad, and some other fun ones there. I think we have to save those and maybe do a part two at some point.
Yes.
Because there are so many more to talk
about. That's always a good
problem
to have.
Yes. So I'm going to set that stack aside because I still have at least 10, I think, that I wanted to share and get excited about. But as I was thinking about us doing this, I thought everyone, you know, if you Google it, everyone does a list of classic picture books. What are the top 100 picture books? And I thought, is that just overkill to do it again? Why would we do it again? And I thought, but there's no way that anyone in a finite list could list all of the favorites. And as families, we're going to be hungry for more. And anyone who knows a child who needs a good picture book is going to be looking for, you know, something that maybe that family doesn't have yet, something that's a little different, a little off the beaten trail maybe, but just really excellent books to share. So I thought, you know, I think we should just go for it. And then my other question then for everyone who's listening is, what are your favorite picture books? And tell us about them, because as you can tell, we're still building our picture book library. So
tell us what to put on our Christmas wish list this year.
Yes. If you have another category of picture book, like an overarching theme that we've not mentioned here, and you think we should gather titles for a different category, let us know about that too, because that would be a really fun project for us to go and find some that have that. We're looking for a beautiful writing style, beautiful content, but also beautiful illustrations. So it's a feast for the eyes as well.
Oh, no. You mean I might have to read more books to do research?
Oh, such suffering.
What a chore.
Well, I think we're out of time for today. Valerie, this was fun. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Lydia.
Thanks for listening, you all. And we will be back at some point with a part two.
Till the next time.